Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Speaking of a good time, this can work as our introduction. It's not.
He said it.
He's done it again. It's not Rate My Takeaway. It's the UBP. The UBP.
UBP. The UBP. The thing is, though, right?
Go on.
This is the thing. Sorry, Scott Telford. I know you were introducing yourself. I love how every single week you do it in such a way that the audience has got no idea what we've been talking about before you hit the record button. But to go in from Rate My Takeaway to talking about a man versus food, but Greg's, like, yeah. It's. Oh. But yeah,
I'm telling you, Rate My Takeaway is a taste sensation. I don't know if anyone else has been watching it this week, but man has blown up. Man just travels up and down the UK. Man's called Danny, eats a lot of takeaways. He's blown up. I watched his live stream celebration last night. It's not about gaming, but it's, you know, entitled banter. Don't worry about it. Man's loving the takeaway food. Should say, though, that this is the Untitled Banter podcast. I'm Scott Telford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello, everyone.
How is Jules Gill doing?
I'm doing very, very well, mate. I was telling you just before we started, I've like literally about 10 minutes ago finished my workout for the day, and I'm on that lovely endorphin high where I'm just kind of like, everything's beautiful, fantastic. In about like maybe 20 minutes, maybe the tail end of this podcast, I'll be like, yeah, next question. I just need to sleep now. I'm
crashing hard, dude. Start to contract again.
Yeah.
We've got a lovely selection of questions. The UBP is always asking for whatever people's thoughts are across the gaming week. We've got a nice selection of stuff, including some random food things, so we'll see how
fantastic.
We go.
Fantastic.
First question from Kill the DJ 95, though. It says, hello governors, KOTOR 3 or New Vegas 2?
Is it meant to be like, hello goofner?
Maybe.
Or have you noticed, by the way, that orcs always speak with Cockney accents?
The other day pointing out that they wouldn't know what a menu was, like, you know, when he's like, meat's back on
meat's back on the
that list of food that we have. Yeah. I mean, it's been 20 years, and someone realized that they shouldn't know what a menu is.
Ridiculous.
But not to worry. Apparently, it was an improvised line on the spot that they didn't change out, if anyone's wondering about the trivia side of it. Would you prefer Knights of the Old Republic 3 or a New Vegas 2? I think I'd probably take New Vegas 2.
I trust
Obsidian more than BioWare in 2021.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem, though, isn't it? Because of the fact that they don't own the rights, and obviously Obsidian have gone off and they've made the fantastic, it's Outer Worlds, isn't it?
Outer Wilds is the indie one.
Yeah, God, I always get them confused and people are looking at me like, you've not played this game. And I'm like, yes, I have. I was there for the preview thing. I have played it.
I just want to know which one's which.
I used to get it always confused as well, because I do this with tons of names of video games where I've remembered it slightly wrong and it completely changes the tone of the game. For example, I did a live stream over on Live and Let's Dice of Death Trap Dungeon, and that's the Choose Your Own Adventure original one.
Right.
And I kept on calling it Darkest Dungeon. Now, people tuning in, expecting to see a very different game then, and there's me just like talking, like making choices and stuff. Very different approach.
I will say, in terms of mixing stuff up, I cannot for the life of me distinguish between Ninja Theory and Team Ninja. Every single time when we write about it, when I talk about it.
Sorry, there's
a difference. I have to Google it. Ninja Theory are the ones that do Hellblade and Enslaved Odyssey to the West. Team Ninja are the Ninja Gaiden Dead or Alive people. But I don't know why.
Right. I feel like I've done them the dirty then. I'm pretty sure I've accused them of liking big jiggle physics when they are clearly not into... They're Enslaved Odyssey to the West and they're just getting boobs thrown at them.
I'm just
going to
start writing Ninja in our citations. But in regards to where Obsidian are at, like you said, they did Outer Worlds and then they got snapped up by Microsoft/Xbox. Mm-hmm. So if they did do New Vegas 2, it would just be an Xbox... Well, assumedly an Xbox exclusive.
Yeah, I mean, that it would work in that sense because it kind of has come full circle. And there is not a team that I would trust more than them to work on it together. But isn't the whole reason that Obsidian kind of split away from Bethesda in the first place because of the fact that they put like an immense amount of pressure on them to deliver? And the only reason that we didn't get a New Vegas 2 to begin with was because they said it has to score, I think it was above 85 on Metacritic. It was something 86 or something, and they got 1 point below. Yeah. And that is the reason why they didn't get it.
Bethesda being full on villains. Like, yeah, they'd said that
they Obsidian did it in a year as well.
It's insane that if anyone wants to look more into the development of New Vegas, yeah, Bethesda were full on. You can do a Fallout, but you have to crunch it within a year, and your bonus structure is going to be contingent on hitting a combined Metacritic score, which they missed out on by like a point or two points.
Ridiculous.
Obsidian are one of the most sort of abused companies in regards to doing deals with people and it not working out. Even South Park, they got taken off and said, oh, we'll do the sequel and stuff. But yeah, I think both of us would go New Vegas just because I would love Obsidian to try that again.
I definitely would, but I think it would have to come with the proviso that either, you know, if we went down the route of KOTOR being made by BioWare again, they'd have to be free from the reins of EA, and we'd need Obsidian kind of free to do what they want to do from Bethesda. Hopefully, if that were to happen, Microsoft would be smart enough to understand that it's money on the table that they're pushing into a bin by basically letting Bethesda say, no, it has to have microtransactions and stuff.
I would assume at this point, all the Xbox Microsoft stuff just calms Bethesda. Just don't worry. You don't have to do Fallout 76. You don't have to do Fallout Shelter. You've got money.
Why do they keep supporting it? They've literally just put out a new update, like locked and loaded. And the fan base, the people who are still paying for it, they have turned around saying, this is too little, too late. What is going on?
I don't know what breed of human is stuck by Fallout 76. I mean, like bless you. I championed you sticking by that game, but nothing about it felt like it was going to be worth your time.
I must have told you the story about when me and Osley decided to download it again to record some footage for a Choose Your Own Adventure.
I feel like you did, but I don't recall it.
2 hours downloading. Half an hour downloading some extra content packs that came in with it. 45 minutes trying to log on because of the stupid system where you've got to log into one account that logs you into another one, and there was a lot of server issues. Finally got into a game. We walked down the hill from the opening vault. I had three enemies disappear on me, and then the game froze when I tried to pick up a tin of bloody beans because it said that the server couldn't actually communicate with it. This is when people were telling me that this game had gotten better. That was like a year and a half after it had launched.
I love when they put like chests in. So it's like, oh, you can pay to have like your own private little chest thing. But everything that you put in there was eaten by the servers.
Oh, I remember
just had to be like, hey, your little private stash, it's kind of gone.
But, do we agree universally that it exists as like the monument to biggest load of bollocks ever as a video game? Do you think that that's an award we can give out? Can we do our own UBP awards?
Yes, absolutely. We should do that as like a half year mark or something. I forget when we started this, but I feel like it's maybe coming up on half year.
Yeah, let's try it.
We could absolutely do the UBP award.
That'd be good.
Biggest pile of bollocks award.
Can it be smouldering pile of bollocks?
Stinking pile of bollocks award. I think just one big bollock. I think it would be like cyberbollock or something like that. But we could figure it out going forward. Next question from an average human. I am of the opinion that Partners in Crime's Turtle Power is the best story in lyrical form that has ever been told. So what's your favorite cold dessert? I myself enjoy a toffee and pecan roulade. Also, all in on Pokemon Snap.
Oh, there's so much to digest literally with that statement. Let's just start with the obvious here. Pokemon Snap. I don't have a Switch. I'm sorry, guys. I know
what the hell,
I hear
Jules?
The chorus of, but I know. But I will be getting one soon because when I come back to the office, I'm going to need something to play on my journey up there.
Oh, it's so good now as well. There's so many good exclusives now.
I've watched the review of it and I've watched many people sort of give their opinions on it. And I'm just like, this game on paper should not be this deliriously entertaining. Like it's an on-rail shooter where you do nothing apart from take pictures. You don't even kill things. Like, you know, like everything in my being is just kind of like, why would I want to play this? But after watching people play through, I'm just like, man, this looks relaxing. Challenging.
It's so tranquil. I mean, I've only played the N64 one. I've got the new one, but I haven't played it yet, mainly because I got both of them at midnight last night and then just played Returnal until about 2 a.m.
Yeah, fair.
Returnal, by the way, blooming stellar. But Pokemon Snap, I think it's the perfect just chillax, just sort of get in your little car and you take photos. And hey, it's like the world of Pokemon you imagine when you were a kid. Like, it's sort of like, oh, they're all real. They're all around me doing their thing and I can take photos and throw apples at them and stuff.
But what's your favorite dessert, though?
See, he said, what's your favorite cold dessert? I enjoy a toffee. It's got to be a tiramisu, I would say.
Oh,
I'm throwing in a tiramisu. I'm trying to think of other cold desserts that I'm a big fan of, but I think, yeah, I'm throwing the tiramisu card down.
I'm partial to a good panna cotta as well.
Mm.
Just nice and creamy with that zest that you get on top with the fruit compote. It's just.
Have you had a toffee and pecan roulade? That's maybe the fanciest thing we've ever said.
You know what? I've not actually had one of those.
I don't even think I know what a roulade is, to be honest.
Well, I know that a rule is a wheel, so I guess it would like you know, get like a wheel
just
of cheese.
A bigger wheel, so a lard wheel.
I mean, yeah. I don't want to sound stupidly ignorant. I'll happily sound ignorant, but I won't sound stupidly ignorant.
No, you don't.
I'm guessing it's kind of like a pie sort of thing.
Either way, none of us know, but maybe that's a whole thing out there in the real world that toffee and pecan roulades are doing the rounds, and maybe someday. We'll find out.
I'm feeling very hungry now, thinking about this pecan pie roulade thing. What was the first part of the question?
The first part was just that they are of the opinion that Partners in Crime's Turtle Power is the best story in lyrical form that's ever been told. No, I don't know what any of that means. It reminded me of Roy Campbell slowly going crazy at the end of Metal Gear Solid 2. So I thought I'd just read that out.
Man.
You know, he needs scissors 61. Next question from PG Quips, which again, brilliant name. I've seen a few articles saying that revenue from free-to-play games amounts to over 85% of overall game revenue. Now, this comes from fortunely.com. I'm interested in your thoughts on it and how it will affect gaming going forward. Hope you're both well and can hopefully get in your new studio soon. I hope for that as well.
Thank you very much.
Now, this thing about, you know, all games being, you know, mobile, that's going to encompass everything like Candy Crush and, you know, like Clash of Clans, all these sort of like Roblox, all these sort of random mobile games that'll be classed as game revenue. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily going to impact the big console manufacturers necessarily or the big console publishers, just because the idea of what is a gamer expands so much further out once you start looking at things like this.
I don't think that like free-to-play models are genuinely, it's such a risk, but I feel like it can pay off dividends if you approach it in the right way. Mm-hmm. Free-to-play games making up 85% of their revenue from that is quite astounding, actually.
Yeah.
Like, it just shows you how embedded microtransactions and how willing people are to spend small amounts of money in video games.
I think as well, like, there's infinitely so many more mobile apps to download, to try out, you know, maybe spend like 50 pence here and a pound here and whatever, versus it's just a much bigger storefront, like on Android and iOS.
Yeah. So you think that maybe it's thrown out the scale, it won't impact like console manufacturers and stuff that we play on.
I'm trying to think of any free-to-play console game that actually went down well. The only one that I can think of is Genshin, like Genshin Impact. Which is like totally solid. Like, obviously you can feel the sort of the money tendrils in every one of the menus asking you to pay more and get different currencies and stuff. But there's not that many big console games where you can look at it like a model and replicate it. I think Genshin is the closest that we've got, but I just think sheer storefront sizes and you know, the consumers playing these things and what is classed as a game or classed as a gamer, like, I think all that stuff just, it gets so wide to what we would think as the gaming industry.
Yeah, true.
It's quite hard to sort of say that. Next question from Eyeball Paul, who's a brilliant name, just Eyeball Paul.
We only get exclusively like comments from people who have amazing handle names.
Who have got banter names. It's Eyeball Paul, who says, favorite energy drink, coffee is not allowed.
Exactly
what mine is, but I'm going to let you leap in.
My favorite energy drink.
I know which one powered me through university.
Oh yeah, I know which one basically saw my, how do I word this in the nicest possible way while also being graphic enough to make people laugh. Made my toilet trips explosive.
Good.
And my life feel like a constant heart attack. And that is a ripoff of Red Bull that was, I don't know if it still exists, it was called Blue Bear. Blue Bear was the rip-off thing that you used to get from the, I think it was either the Spa or the Co-op. Big shout out to either one of those if you want to sponsor us.
Big shout out to the Spa.
Yeah, big shout out to imagine if it was like the UVP sponsored by Spa.
Sponsored by Lidl.
I mean, yeah, shopper. It was like the discount knockoff brand of Red Bull. And you know when you like drink something and you can feel like it permeate your the enamel of
you
your teeth?
You feel your DNA like, changing.
It's just kind of like it's like drinking lightning. You just kind of just go like, whoa, oh God, I can't die.
Mine would be relentless. My like diet across most of university, especially my master's, was just cans of orange relentless with scotch eggs. because in my
Orange Relentless as well.
Yeah. Not Monster. Monster for me is too much. I know Ben Roy's blood is made of Monster at this point, but I can't take the Monster. It's too much. It's too sugary. Right. It's too weird.
Can we use this as a platform to stage an intervention? Ben Roy Turner, if you are listening to us right now, we care about you deeply, and we do not want you to die by drinking too much Monster, of which you drink at least 7 cans a week.
It's
one every single day.
Seen without the can, to be honest.
And I assume he probably doubles up, maybe even triples up. So this is a concerned parent asking. You know what I'm saying?
It's either Monster Energy or bottles of wine for Mr. Ben Roy, Mr. Wine Roy, Mr. Monster Roy.
Could you mix them?
He's definitely tried. He hasn't said, but I imagine that you could, just if you were determined enough. But what were we even talking about? Mobile games? Yeah.
The Malbec Monster combination. That's horrifying.
Yeah, mine would definitely be relentless. Yours is weird knockoff Blue Bear thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's whatever you need.
By the way, just to go back, have you seen the amount of crazy new flavors they've got for like Monster and Relentless and stuff? So I went down to the local co-op, sponsored by co-op.
Not the spa.
not the spa today. And I saw there that they've got, they've all got funny names. It's got like passion fruit punch and stuff like that, or like the knockout, whatever. But one of them intrigued me, which is called the Mule. And the Mule is a ginger flavored one. Now that's going to divide.
Kicks or something. That has to be the only reason that it takes your head off with its weirdness.
That's going to divide the room a bit, isn't it?
I'm always up for when we get back in the office and we're actually in person again, we should do little tests of these things, get a whole bunch of...
I'd love that. Imagine, like, so it's kind of like ranking them, but live, which is the best thing. And like, Ben Roy can be the sommelier of monsters. he's pouring them, you know, when they put their thumb on the outside of the bottle. So
it's definitely... he's the one who comes. He comes to the table. He's got the towel over the shoulder, over the arm or whatever it is. He sort of pours you half a glass.
It's his little sock snake friend that he had from the... from the WWE. What's his name?
I don't know.
Santiago or something like that.
Wrestling-based thing. It doesn't make any sense for anyone who's not been in our office, but no, not sorry. Next question, which is kind of a follow-on from the mobile stuff, from Zach, who says, what are your thoughts on mobile games overall and how they are now compared to where they were a few years ago? Some have file sizes bigger than a few console games, but still get ignored in the gaming community.
There are some mobile games out there that are actually genuinely brilliant. Mm-hmm. And I do find that the the mobile gaming service that is offered on phones is capable of emulating old games really well. Like you can get, I'm pulling this out of my hat, but I'm not saying this is a great example. Like the Secret of Mana version they had there. They had the Ace Attorney video games made it onto iPhone and stuff like that. Like it's a good way to play those games on the move if they're like pick up and play. Like, but that they are very minimal.
I was going to say,
it is the utter Wild West, the mobile gaming market, because I don't understand how they can get away with such flagrant IP violation. Like you'll go on there and type in Fall Guys, right? Yeah. And obviously we know that Fall Guys is still like phenomenally popular, but there is no Fall Guys mobile game.
No, not yet.
There is hundreds, if not thousands, of Fall Guys.
It was like when Flappy Bird
games
took off, but it was just sort of like Flippy Bird or like or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that, I mean, it's strange because I watched, there's a really good video by Racevic, who's like I totally recommend as a gaming journalist, gaming coverage industry brainy person. Maybe not necessarily brainy, but they do really good gaming editorial videos, doing a thing on modern mobile games and just talking about the fact that Rockstar have actually embraced mobile stuff quite a lot, and their versions of it's Bully and Max Payne is the one that I bought on mobile are actually incredible. Like they're actually very well optimized. They have tons of different settings in for different graphics options and aiming options and control options. And he was quite like amazed by that. And that got me into a whole world of revisiting PlayStation 1 games, which I did mention last week, but I've since been playing Jackie Chan Stuntmaster, which I just saw that a mobile game, but Silent Bomber's on there. I got a bit of the
Silent Bomber's on phones.
If you get the EPSXe emulator, you get whatever you want, mate.
I'm holding this
trench coat open for you. It's just all these deals right.
What are you buying?
What are you buying? Because I've got everything. So I just was like, I revisited that Ninja game. It's called Ninja.
Which one, the Jiggle Physics or the real one?
Because there was an old PS1 game called Ninja Shadow of Darkness, I think it was called, with like a blue font, like a jagged logo. I think you'd recognize it if you saw it. Tekken 3, Jackie Chan Stuntmaster, things that I can't get anywhere else, and Silent Bomber. That's my mobile games. That's just, you know, breaking legalities left, right, and center.
for me, will you seek out two games for me?
Go on.
Cooler World, because that's where you play a beach ball and you've got to
solve. Oh, I know
puzzles.
What Cooler World is. I
and also,
can I guess your second one?
Go on, guess.
Is your second? You went with an M. I was going to go with Tomba. I thought you were going to.
Tomba on the phone. That's really brilliant. That. Yeah. Try out Mojo.
Okay, I've not even heard of Mojo.
It's a puzzle-solving game where you play as a robot with a giant sphere for a body. And it's weird as hell. Very weird.
I've started making a list of what I'm going to go back to. Future Cop LAPD is also on there. Just tons of games that never got re-released or whatever, but were like made my PS1 childhood. Bugs and Taz Time Busters, playing that the other night. Carry on.
Mate, do you know what popped into my recommended thing the other day? I don't know where it is. I was like having a chat and it's... Mm. Oh, yeah. It was because I was on the Live and Let's Dice Discord and I was on the video games recommended thing. And somebody put in these two words that just sung to me, and it was Pandemonium 2.
I never played Pandemonium. Oh,
man,
I know it's a thing.
So good.
I mean, that's the thing. Now that I've got, I mean, everything's open. Everything just because you can just go on, you know, various websites to acquire various ROMs, and everything is just there. So I'm just kind of like all these things that I either couldn't afford when I was a kid or I didn't get around to, I can sort of revisit now.
But Scott has all of the original copies legitimately. Remember, it's only legitimate if you own the real copies. So Scott Taylor, I'm looking at him now, guys, on the webcam, and I can see all of the games that he's listed behind.
It's very true. They're all behind me. But I can also, I mean, I am using a sold piece of software that's available on the Android store, and then whatever happens after that, I don't know.
Said though, it is the Wild West, the mobile gaming market. I mean, you could go up there and just be probably buy a kidney with an app.
Well, exactly. I mean, the point being that how else am I going to play Jackie Chan Stuntmaster? There's not any viable alternative. How else am I going to do it?
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
So next question from Travis Webb. What has been your favorite Resident Evil moment across the franchise's history?
Oh, come on. That's not fair. How can you single
30
down
years
that,
of games.
Yeah, that many games into one moment? But seriously, great question.
25, I guess. Yeah.
Jeepers creepers.
Punch.
Well, the boulder punch is infamous, but for all the wrong reasons. If you're looking for the quintessential Resident Evil experience, in my opinion,
yes,
it is the first moment that you see Nemesis in the cutscene where he annihilates Brad's face with his tentacle fist, and it goes through, drops it, turns around, just goes,
Stars.
I absolutely kept, like I just drank three blue bears. It had gone straight through me like bricks, like squidgy bricks.
I think for me, it's I'm trying to think of the moments when I just kind of sat back and went, I absolutely love everything about this. And part of it would actually be the original Nemesis being chased by Nemesis, like through the streets of the original PS1 version of RE3. But I also love the opening of 4 when you when you're jumping in and out of the different buildings, when the whole village is coming after you.
Yeah.
Because back in the day, like, it's easy to forget how innovative and hadn't been done over shoulder aiming was. Mm-hmm. And it was a thing back in the day that Resident Evil 4 was only on the GameCube, but I had a friend with the GameCube and watching him play it and just being like, this is the future, this is insane.
Yeah.
Oh my god, you can climb the ladders, oh my god, you can jump out the window, and you can, all the while aiming at dudes' headshots, all that kind of stuff. That would be my thing for me. I think it was just discovering Resident Evil 4, like how much of a step forward that whole thing was. From where 3 sort of left off.
What a next great franchise, though. Seriously,
I know.
Like, I'm so excited because obviously at the time of recording, Resident Evil 8 is just on the horizon.
It's like a week, 2 weeks.
Oh, it feels like it's, weirdly enough, it feels like it's crept up on us. But at the same time, it's been probably one of the most overexposed entries since Resident Evil 7 with all of its demos and content that's coming out. It just feels like nobody's ready for it. And I love that about it.
It's cool because they the way that they've rolled the demos out has been a big old talking point, because they did like half an hour of the village 2 weeks ago. There was half an hour of the castle area last Sunday. And starting from this Sunday for the entirety of next week is both of those areas combined. So if you want to go and just try out some Resident Evil 8, I don't know how long the timer is on it. I'm assuming an hour. But they extended the demo like window. So if you want to play some RE8, you can next week. And at least you can sort of get like a feel for it. Next question from Laughing Sunbro, a legendary Laughing Sunbro, a regular, who says, what is the best romance in Mass Effect? Best BFF? And was the Citadel DLC the ending that we actually deserved? I never played the Citadel DLC because I was so disgusted by the end of Mass Effect 3 that I've only ever finished that game once. I'm going to do it again on the Legendary Edition, but that was me.
The Citadel DLC was an apology. So I really do feel like there's no way of looking at it otherwise. I feel like it gave... What Mass Effect 3 suffered from was a focus on action that unfortunately meant that the story had to be pushed to the side while they filled out lots and lots of like action sequences. Mm-hmm. And when they got to the end, there were so many ways that they could have wrapped it up. But I definitely understand that the pressures put on them by like outside forces did dictate that they kind of had to just cut their losses and go.
There's a great interview, just super quickly. I can't think who this is with, but this is going to be so vague. But there was absolutely an interview on YouTube, I promise it exists, with the original BioWare team that have since left BioWare, talking about the reality of making Mass Effect 3 and how they literally were making a lot of it up as they went along, but they didn't know what the ending was going to be. And that came together throughout development. And so like they had an original version that was all to do with dark space and this weird black matter out in the middle of space that would eat things up and whatever else. They were kind of going towards that. It's mentioned in Mass Effect 1, so they were like, oh, we can tie it into that. Then they ended up going down the Starchild route, but they talk very frankly about how that whole period was just crazy and how
I can imagine.
Barely stitched it together as they went.
I do feel sorry for them in a way, because you can tell it's the same with like Metal Gear Solid 5. It's just an ending that they didn't want to make, but they had to make.
Yeah.
But still, the Citadel DLC was absolutely fantastic. I do feel like it rounded off a lot of stories, gave a lot of character development in the right areas, and it just made you feel like your decisions had more impact again. And that is, at the end of the day, what Mass Effect is all about. Mm-hmm. But to answer the top end of the question is,
I was going to say, best romance.
It's Tali.
Like, are you a Tali man?
It's always Tali. It's just, she's lovable. She's so nice.
Mm. See, when I played through them, I was young teenage, horny me, young horny. So it was just sort of, you know, at the beginning of that game, it was just sort of, I just made a beeline for Ashley. I was like, oh my God, let's just be together. And then Mass Effect 2, she's not even in it because you're coming back from the dead. So I was like, well, Miranda, she's the one. She's the, I'm going to
genetically superior.
Genetically sort of, you know, being offered up kind of things. So I was like, right, I'll go, you know, chase it. Not a meaningful relationship amongst them. Just sort of horny me running in all directions, trying to get with the most obvious obvious person that you're supposed to get with. Didn't build any relationships whatsoever. Nah.
See, mine was just a long burn love affair. It was just like me and Sally from day one, man. As soon as I met her, I was just like, interesting species. Mm-hmm. I really like the idea of like a civilization that lives in flotillas, so they've got no real identity and home. Like, it's their fault that the Geth are like rising up and taking over there. So they live with this kind of existential guilt of like what they've done, creator versus creation sort of thing. And then that sort of manifests into this beautifully tragic story of her looking for redemption and anything possible to justify the existence of their race, like to carry on surviving, because after what they've done, they kind of feel like giving up. Mm-hmm. And at the end of things, after all you've been through, just that nice moment of tenderness, being able to show true love and affection to her. I thought that it was really well written. I really did enjoy it.
Getting the iStock photo version of her face.
I printed it out, put it on my wall.
That's one of the biggest things I'm super curious about in the Legendary Edition is like, you want to talk about things that are endemic to how rushed and how crazy frantic that game's development was. Will they have changed the Tally face? Will they have actually done a new proper Tally face?
I don't know, because I'm actually, if they do change it, they're acknowledging that it was a problem. If they don't change it,
before, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. If they don't change it, then it's just kind of like it might suggest they didn't care, especially when you look at other things in the Legendary Edition that have got so much focus. Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
I'm curious how it goes. But in terms of best romance, for me, it would definitely be Miranda. But going back through it, because my wife went through Mass Effect 1, that's where we are in the trilogy. Then I was like, we should stop. We should do this again with the Legendary Edition. Mm-hmm. Hers was Liara. And I was like, there's actual human, you know, sort of sentient chemistry here that there wasn't when I was just sort of running after attractive people. But definitely Liara, I think, is the more considered option. For me, best BFF would absolutely be Garrus. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it's not going to be James Vega. It's got to be Garrus.
I think that the best thing about him is in Mass Effect 2 when he's doing his whole Archangel persona, and when he suddenly just drops all of that because you mentioned the word suicide mission to him, he's like, yep, I'm in. It's kind of like, do you want to hear any more about it? Nah, not at all, pal. No, I've ride or die.
I still remember Mass Effect 3 when you sort of do like their version. I think you do play golf. I just remember that whole final scene where you're standing with him and you're in the Citadel and you're on like an elevated platform looking out and like into the distance and doing this sort of like one less job. Like, we'll have this round of golf before we go and throw ourselves at this thing. Next question from Andros: will Rare ever be as good as they were back in the heyday with such gems as Conker's Bad Fur Day? Will we ever get a proper Banjo-Kazooie 3, or is this it and have they truly lost it?
I wish you could see my face, you sweet summer child. I'm afraid to tell you that Rare, the glory days of Rare, are officially over, but we must not mourn their passing. We should look at them and champion them, for they truly were the best of days.
Don't be sad that it's over, just be glad that it happened.
Exactly. I don't think that there is any chance in hell that they will ever be able to get back to where they were. The fact that the Banjo-Kazooie property has been stone cold dead ever since Nuts and Bolts drive a nail through its own face, I do not see that series returning. And if it does, then my God, I will be happy to be proved wrong. But as it stands right now, I'm afraid, my friend, that this is the end.
I am curious to sort of shine a little light, punch a little bit of light ray through that dark cloud, because we are getting another Perfect Dark. It's made by a collection of like three different dev teams. I think some of them are ex-Rare people. But the early conversations around that game are that it's going to be third person and it'll be a completely different thing. So it's like,
I do you know what? Yeah. I actually commend them for trying something new, because when you're handling a title IP like that, they kind of have to try and move things forward again. Like, don't get me wrong, on paper, the concept of things like Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts, it was a clever idea to try and move things forward. Because if you look back at what Banjo-Kazooie 1 and 2 did, you perfect the formula. You can't advance it from there. So you need to introduce something new. The problem is that they chose bloody cars. That was the problem. This isn't Lego Racers, pal.
I mean, I've heard Nuts and Bolts, I think, divorced
don't
from...
You, I was about to say, I can already tell you, you're going to be a tale for tale, and you're going to be like, it's not that bad!
It's not that bad! When was the last time you played it? Because did you play it in the mindset of, oh my God, what is this? Or have you gone back to it since then?
I bought this day one.
Given it the Brutal Legend treatment and gone, you know, actually divorced from expectation. It's actually all right.
Okay, this is the thing. I'll give you that. I have not gone back to it since my first initial playthrough of it. But I know that from memory, vivid memory, how utterly it was just a
wide wasteland. It is really nothingness. There is nothing to do in half of the arenas that you're in. And the bits that you do find, it's just like, now build a car. And it's just kind of like, oh, sick. I've just done that.
Would you like to put six wheels on this thing? And then
no, I wouldn't.
I like the idea of nuts and bolts in terms of them fleshing it out. But yeah, if I had come off the Banjo-Kazooie lineage and then I got this weird vehicle thing, I think I would have been as freaked out as you were.
Do you know what I would have done? If I were Rare and I was, because the thing is about Rare is that they're incredibly self-aware and they like making jokes at the industry and genres and stuff. If they were clever, they should have just started one of the missions with, now build a car. And everyone's like, groan, here we go again. And what you've got to do is you've got to set fire to the car to claim the car insurance on it.
Very good.
That would have actually been a fun mission.
That would have been a life lesson as well. As someone right now.
Commit fraud. He was
in the middle of trying to secure a car. Anything about car finance type stuff would have been a godsend.
Is your car hunt, had to be very careful how I said that, going as well as your TV hunt?
But, oh God. Well, I mean, guys, right now, if people remember the legacy of me trying to get a TV.
Legacy.
Turned into three different TVs in a row. Right now, we've narrowed down one car. So if that car then breaks, I replace it. It breaks, replaces again. Then history will repeat. But for now, it's all in on potentially one car that hopefully is actually drivable. But we'll wait and see. Final question from RB, who says, best junk food / snacks for a long gaming session. Grinning face with smiling eyes.
Grinning face with smiling eyes right back at you, friend.
Actually, I will throw in, there's another little food question underneath from RG, who says, will Mars ever come to their senses and bring back the Mars Delight?
What's a Mars Delight?
I thought a Mars Delight was the drink, but I swear I've just seen that. So
no, the Mars milkshake was amazing.
Is it still there? That was amazing.
Well, I haven't had it for years. I'm not allowed it.
It is amazing. They still definitely make Mars milkshakes. Maybe not where he's from, or the Mars Delight.
Hold on. I'm going to the Google. You vamp while I type in Mars Delight.
Okay.
Mars.
Two random podcasters don't know what a Mars Delight is.
Oh, okay. Right. So what it is, Scott, is I'll try and describe it to you. This will be an interesting one.
Okay.
It's a long singular bar.
Oh,
with ripples on the top, and inside it kind of looks like it's got a wafer and two separate layers, one of which looks to possibly be praline.
It's the game of the year edition of chocolate bars. I know exactly what that is. Yeah,
literally the first thing that I've clicked on here, it just says, for everyone who still misses the Mars Delight every single day.
I wonder if the Ripple people got in touch and just said, hold on, if we Venn diagram this, you're coming into our turf with all this Ripple-based chocolate.
But aren't the Ripple people the same people as the Cadbury
people? I don't know.
Are the Cadbury people.
I'm trying to think of the lore of how these things get made. I'm just thinking of the canon, because I'm just thinking, well, at some point they need a distinguishing selling point, and Ripples are the Ripples. So if Mars Delight have them, that's their turf taken up.
Before you carry on with that, do you remember that the Cadbury boss, the big CEO, is the person that said that water is not a human right?
That was literally the dude from Nestle, I think.
Oh, was it Nestle? Oh, sorry. Yeah. I'm just tired of the same though. Horrible. That guy there, that's like a literal Bond villain. He was the Quantum of Solace's Bond villain.
I love Bill Burr's take on that, where he's just sort of doing this, like, I want to own all the water. I want to put it under my house. I want to own it all. And it's ridiculous. Bring back the Mars Delight. I don't know. I have to assume some sort of legal battle. But in terms of best junk food snacks for a long gaming session, do you have anything for that? Because I think we've talked about it before. I don't like getting my controller covered in crispness. I don't want any crisp fuzz or anything
If I was to be the boring person that I am today, then I probably would choose a nice big cafe tier of coffee, so that I could basically just keep myself stimulated and going when I'm feeling a bit low. Then on the side, I probably have pita bread and different hummus flavors, because I love dipping it in, and like you say, you avoid getting the dip on top of your controller and it doesn't have the greasy residue of crisps.
See, my thing, I think of it almost utilitarian style, where I'm just sort of, it's 1 a.m. I want to try a different game. I don't want to go to bed yet. I want to be up until 1:30, but I am flagging. So I have to have something with a lot of sugar in it. So I've started having Rocky Road at 1:30 in the morning or 1 o'clock in the morning. And just,
Scott, it's just, that's not a healthy mentality.
It wakes me up. Then I'm going again, and I'm wide awake again.
No wonder it's waking you up, because you're about to go into a diabetic coma.
Well, it's fine. Then I can lie down. I can get my rest. It's fine. I'll do the horizontal later. But Returnal's not going to play itself, mate. I mean, I don't know what the solution is, other than eating some sort of chocolatey treat at 1 a.m. to refuel the old, you know, the old reserves.
To be fair, though, that's exactly the mentality that everyone has when they come out of the club. It's just kind of like you do the checklist in your mind. You're like, all right, I've had a few drinks. I've had a great time. Had a little bit of a dance. All I've got to do is get home. And as soon as you start walking, it just goes chips, 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 chips. Go get some fries. Go get some fries. Go get some
get a kebab. Kind of like, get a kebab.
Yeah,
just get just everything kind of, all at once. Put garlic on it.
The funny thing is that you always know the same thing. You got that horrible fluorescent light making everyone look really tired and grimy. Like, and then you basically, what you're meant to say, you know that inside you're meant to say to the person who says, like, what can I get you, mate? You're meant to say, can I just have a small portion of chips, please? What comes out of your mouth is like, deep fried pizza, large chips, cod, battered sausage, mushy peas on the side, curry sauce.
Slobber in a general direction and then just sort of...
pint of curry sauce, please, mate.
We're only a month and a bit away from that reality coming back. We'll have to explore what the post-lockdown...
horrible reality.
I am kind of looking forward to it, though. In terms of the UBP, 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 this is UBP, your title band, a podcast. I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to everybody for all your questions, sending stuff in. We'll catch you guys all next week. For now, goodbye.
Goodbye, everyone. But before we go, I just want to say, come up with a name for the UBP Awards. Okay.
Something. We're definitely, at the minute, we're going with the Pile of Bollocks Award. I think that was what we...
Oh, yeah, the slobbering pile of bollocks. Okay.
Till next time. See you later. See you then.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.